Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, cha, bonjour, namaste, jumbo. Bienvenidos, my name is Jed Lee, and this is Reading with Your Kids. We are coming to you from the beautiful and historical neighborhood of Reedville, the loveliest little neighborhood in all of Boston. Our mission is to help families grow closer through reading. Every episode of this podcast is a new adventure filled with great stories, amazing authors, and powerful reminders of how reading together helps families grow closer. You can help us in this mission by telling all of your family and friends about the show and letting them know that they can hear us on the WREB AM-FM 24/7 radio network. And they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods Podcast, at a CastBox, Player FM, YouTube. Wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. We have two amazing guests for you today. First up, Leocadia George is returning to Reading with Your Kids to celebrate Trumpet the Miracle Wolf Pup. Trumpet becomes a mom. Later in the show, Vanessa Roeder will be here to celebrate Narwhal versus Kindergarten. Get ready, adventure fans. Toby Baxter is back. And I Heart River Home, the fourth thrilling book in the Adventures of Toby Baxter series, written by Tim Wright, 13-year-old Toby dives into his most unexpected quest yet. He's battling trolls, navigating the sandpit of love, and getting stuck with an L-O-V-E compass. But when the girl of his dreams, Rainy, is kidnapped, Toby must summon more courage than ever before. All four books in the Adventures of Toby Baxter series have been honored as Reading With Your Kids certified great reads, each packed with fast-paced action, humor, and heart. So grab your copy of I Heart River Home today and join Toby on an unforgettable journey through River Home, where every page is an adventure. This episode of Reading With Your Kids is brought to you by Trumpet, the Miracle Wolf Pup series. There's a brand new book in the series, and we're so excited to tell you all about it. Trumpet Becomes a Mom. In this exciting book, Trumpet and Lighthawk, now a bonded pair, start their own family with their very first litter of pups. Families can read together, schools can explore the importance of wolf packs in conservation, and Trumpet fans everywhere can celebrate this milestone in her incredible journey. Grab your copy today, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, select bookstores, and the Wolf Conservation Center, where Trumpet and her family live. Plus, 50% of all profits go right back to supporting the Wolf Conservation Center, with more donated to Lighthawk Conservation Flying. So grab your book today and have a group haul for Trumpet and her family. Well, let you know that this episode of Reading With Your Kids is also brought to you by We're Going on a Space Adventure, written by Marie Nichols. This is a Reading With Your Kids certified great read. Blasting off and speeding through space, Graham cheers to the moon and beyond. But Bracken quickly learns that Graham has a fear of flying and that he must manage control of the spaceship. On the moon, they narrowly escape a hideous monster as a crater explodes, and on Mars, they need to outrun Martian creatures or risk becoming their dinner. Hoping to find a friendlier planet, they decide to try Jupiter. Then clank, 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 something is attacking the spaceship. You and your kids are going to love this book. It's fun. It's exciting. It celebrates intergenerational friendships, and we love those. We're going on a space adventure by Marie Nichols. It is a Reading With Your Kids certified great read. I am very excited. We have been speaking to this author for many, many years. She's returning to the show to celebrate book four in her Trumpet the Miracle Wolf Pup series. The new book is called Trumpet Becomes a Mom. Please welcome back to the show, Leocadia George. My friend, how are you?
Great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. You've been such a great friend of the show for so many years. It's I'm delighted to see how much the series has grown and how people are responding to it.
Yeah, more and more people are finding out about her story, buying her books, sharing her story, and also watching her on the web cameras that are live web cameras at the Wolf Conservation Center. It's just been such an honor to share her story.
So let's remind everybody exactly who Trumpet is.
So Trumpet is a critically endangered Mexican gray wolf. She was born at the Wolf Conservation Center. They partake in the SAFE program, and that's saving animals from extinction. Because these are critically endangered animals, they do need human intervention to make sure that they don't go extinct. And so she just highlights the conservation aspect along with the heartwarming story of how she was born and grew up and found love and now became a mom.
What is it? What is it that caused the Mexican gray wolves to become almost extinct in needing protection?
I would say primarily it was hunting and killing of wolves. When they realized the numbers were going down and that humans would need to intervene, they were found in a portion of Mexico. And their range was both in the U.S. and Mexico, and they dwindled down to a number of seven wolves in the entire world. So at that point, Mexico decided to give the wolves to the U.S., knowing that we would have a better chance of saving the species from becoming extinct. So they were all brought into captivity, and then that's when they decided to start the program to rebuild the population.
Wow. And what's the biggest difference between the Mexican gray wolves and other wolves that might be native to parts of the United States?
So Mexican gray wolves are a subspecies of the gray wolf. Most people, I think, would recognize the Canadian Rocky Mountain gray wolves. Those were the ones that were introduced into Yellowstone. But I think a lot of other people would also recognize the Arctic wolves. We do have another critically endangered wolf species. That's the red wolf. And they're mostly on the East Coast. Right now, their only secure area is in North Carolina. And their numbers are down, I think, right now below 30. So they're really suffering. And we do need to get more wolves back out into the wild to make sure that they don't go extinct in the wild again.
If there's somebody out there listening that's saying to themselves, you know, I like dogs and everything, but wolves, they might come and they might eat my cat. Or why do we need to save these dangerous animals?
Yeah, so one thing that people should know is that all dogs are descended from wolves. So all those wonderful features about dogs that we love about them, that, you know, that they come up to us waggling their tail and looking for kisses, those are behaviors that wolves will display towards each other. You know, that's just showing that social, that joy, that you're part of my pack. So that's one thing people should recognize when they say, I love dogs, but what about wolves? Now, wolves are a wild animal, and they have a vital role in the ecosystem. They are a top predator in the ecosystem. They help maintain a balance of the ungulate population, those hoofed animals, deer, bison, and moose, you know, all those animals, so that they don't eat, you know, all the vegetation to the ground, that they kind of move around. That's one thing that they do very well. And once they reintroduced the wolves into Yellowstone, they really saw a resurgence of the whole ecosystem rebounding and flourishing.
Yeah. So this new book, Trumpet Becomes a Mom, that must be a real big cause for celebration.
Yeah, no, this was very exciting. So one of the things that many people know, but not everybody knows, is that Trumpet the Miracle Wolf Pup is based on a true story, based on the true events of Mexican gray wolf Trumpet F1505. And she actually had this litter live on the web cameras. She went into the den that has a camera in there and she gave birth. We were able to see her nursing the puppies, and really showing that love. And it really was a wonderful moment to be able to share that, even though she didn't know that she was being recorded. But for us to kind of see her bonding with her puppies. And actually, when I was writing this story, I did tear up a little bit at that point because she really came into her own. She's a wonderful mother. And it was just such a great to see it on camera, but also great to put it down on paper and add it to her story.
What was it that drew you to Trumpet in the first place?
So it was actually me learning about her story, that she is the only descendant from her father. And, you know, knowing that we needed more good wolf books out there for young kids. And with kids, they really do relate to one either person or animal. When they're really young, it's kind of like a one-to-one is a great way for them to create a bond, to learn. So it was a great opportunity to share her story, considering she was the only pup in her litter. And that way we could start that bonding moment. And then, you know, as she grew up, you know, she meets another wolf. And then when she becomes a mom, now they're a family of five. And so, but at least the young kids could kind of go through that track of, you know, when she was just a little puppy and really create that bond.
Yeah. It's fascinating that this, you have such a deep affection for the wolves and for Trumpet. How did you fall in love with Trumpet and to the point where you're really volunteering many, many hours at the Wolf Conservation Center?
Right. And she's not the only wolf there, and she's not, isn't the only one that has a story to tell, but her story is perfect for young kids to follow. And so that's why her story became a children's book story. I had an immense respect for her because, you know, she's, if I were to guess as far as what I know her personality is like, there's a high chance she would not have left her parents to start her own family. But being that, you know, she was at the time, the number one genetically distinct Mexican gray wolf, female Mexican gray wolf in the entire program, she had to have puppies in order to help save the species. And so they had her pair up with another wolf. And obviously, anybody going into a new situation, just like even me with this author situation that's new, it's daunting. It's scary. But she just met it head on and just adjusted. And now she's a pack leader. And it's just an honor to be able to tell her story, her experiences in that, but also to have seen it. It was really a joyous experience.
Yeah. Now, I didn't know it at the time, but I was recently just a few miles away from the Wolf Conservation Center last month. Tell us a little bit about the center itself, please.
Yeah, so it was founded, I believe, in 1999. At the time, they only had ambassador wolves, and then they got some Mexican gray wolves and red wolves from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife to start to participate in the program because they had the space available. So they decided to open the facility to the public. They can sign up for programs and learn about the wolves. So that's how it started. And then grew, and they grew their social media reach, and that really expanded their reach. So there are people that follow the Wolf Conservation Center from, you know, the other side of the globe. We have followers from Australia and China. And so all over the place, people tune into those web cameras, they follow, you know, Facebook or Instagram. And then we do have guests that fly in from across the globe. We've had guests with many, many different accents coming in to visit the Wolf Conservation Center and see these amazing wolves.
Yeah. And it's located just a few, like an hour or so or 2 hours from New York City, north of New York City?
Yeah, yeah, less than 2 hours. It's probably about an hour. I mean, it depends on traffic. But it's in South Salem, New York. And so we do have people coming from the city as well. But it is kind of funny that sometimes there are people that are, you know, within half an hour and they don't know. And I was one of those people. I didn't know about the Wolf Conservation Center until my sister-in-law from Italy found it. And she alerted us that it was there. And, you know, both my brother and I were like, really? And that's how we got involved. That's how I got involved with the Wolf Conservation Center.
You just went and said, well, I have to visit this place. It's right around the corner, and then fell in love with it, huh?
Yeah, yeah. No, she had wanted to go while she was visiting here. And unfortunately, all the programs were booked out. So at that time, she wasn't able to go. But I decided, you know, this great opportunity, and I saw that there were volunteer opportunities there. So I just signed up to volunteer, and, you know, I've been taking with it ever since. It's just such a great community there, and just the work that they're doing is wonderful.
You know, an Italian brought me to a very interesting, on a very interesting trip we had. We've hosted international kids in our home, and one of them was a young woman from Milan, Italy, and she was in medical school, and she came and spent a couple of months with us and then went on tour with me and my daughter, and we were traveling all around the southeast of the United States, and we're in Atlanta. And somehow she found out that the CDC has a disease museum. And she came up to me. She said, Jed, can we go to see the disease museum? And I thought, okay. And we went, and it was the most unique and bizarre experience we ever had. And I'm really glad that we did it. And I could say, we went to the disease museum, and I seem to have caught a disease, and I can't speak now.
It's contagious. I had that disease on Monday.
So tell me about you as a writer. I know that you're a therapist in your day job. Did you dream that you'd be a writer someday, or was this a complete surprise for you?
Oh, this was a complete surprise, and I wouldn't have done it if I did not recognize that her story would resonate with kids. So, you know, once I started learning about her story, writing it down, that I could do. That was fine. It was making adjusting the writing and editing and, you know, taking a lot of content out to make it something that 3 and 4 year olds could enjoy, just because I didn't want it to become overwhelming. So I did have the choice whether I should make it a children's book for older kids, but being that, you know, there are some, you know, stories that really vilify the wolves and that we grow up with, and I realize we really do need more good wolf books out there. And by good wolf, I mean something that's more realistic. Mm-hmm. Her story is great, actually, because so many aspects of her life, they highlight various aspects of conservation. And then the challenge is to make it something that, you know, you could talk about with young kids. And if, you know, as they get older, that's when you can kind of talk a little bit more in depth and detail about it. But it, you know, for these books, it's more just an introduction of that aspect. You know, one of the things that I like to highlight in the third book, actually, is that her mate was flown in with a conservation group, a group of pilots that help endangered species. And that that airline is that conservation group of pilots. It's called Light Hawk Conservation Flying. And so her mate was nicknamed Light Hawk as a thank you to them. And so that's a perfect opportunity. And you don't have to talk about the whole background of this conservation group with the kids, but it was perfect timing to just be able to show the plane in there. And then, you know, in the back of all the books, I mentioned who's featured in the books, but you know, the kids love to talk about like a wolf was on a plane. So these are just great opportunities throughout her life that highlight the various aspects of conservation.
Yeah. Yeah. And are you able to get out and visit classrooms and share trumpet stories with kids in their schools?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And actually in the fourth book, Trumpet Becomes a Mom, the newest one, one of the things I wanted to highlight was education as far as conservation efforts, both in the classroom at the Wolf Conservation Center when they do the programs. I wanted to highlight that. But I also wanted to highlight that teachers can use the these web cameras or the information from the Wolf Conservation Center in their classrooms right there. And that's one of the teachers that was featured. I did a an author visit and a reading to her class, and she just loved it. And she would start off every day in her classroom having the kids come in front of the TV, put on the web cameras. They would settle on the map right in front, and that way not everybody's running around and talking, and they were focused. And that's how they would start the day, and then they would go into their classroom routine. But it was just a great gathering moment, and, you know, just to get the kids together, focused. And she would do that every day. And I was like, you know, just because she embraced it so much, I was like, I have to feature this and just let teachers know that this is also an opportunity to teach kids about wolves in a way that's not overwhelming, daunting. And you can just observe. And when I tell you on these web cameras, just observing the wolves is such an amazing experience. They have such grace. And a lot of times they're just kind of hanging out and kind of like sleeping, but sometimes there's playful moments. So, you know, it's really nice to be able to just kind of watch them in their natural habitat.
Yeah, yeah, cool. How big is the conservation center? That these guys had acres to run around in?
Yeah, so each of the enclosure is over an acre. Overall, I believe the conservation center is over 30 acres, but obviously it's divided by families. So each pack is a family, regardless of whether it's mother, father, and puppies, or there are some families that are just siblings and they consider themselves families. It's not, you know, it makes no difference to them. They're a team, they're a family, they care about each other. They have their little family squabbles as well, but they're a family. And so they are each enclosure has one wolf family.
That's fascinating. Really, really is fascinating. I'm curious, are we going to look forward to Trumpet Becomes a Grandma and number
well,
five?
So one of the things that wolves do is they will have try to have puppies at least each year. And so she has had a number of puppies. And so I'm working on the fifth book at this point. Again, like I said, her story highlights so many aspects of conservation. And one of the things, because these animals, they're so critically endangered, the challenge is the genetics. Right now, in the wild population, all the Mexican gray wolves are considered full siblings genetically. Mm. And so that's really challenging when wolves are trying to pair up and have families of their own. So Trumpet being one of the most genetically distinct wolves, she has had the opportunity to have some of her puppies cross-fostered or fostered into the wild. And what they'll do is they'll take the puppies before they're 2 weeks old, before those eyes open, like I featured in the second book, before the eyes open, before they can hear, they'll fly them out and then place them with another wolf family, a wild wolf family that has puppies around the same age. And they can just put the puppies right into with the other, the litter that's from the wild mother, and they'll adopt them. And they're one of the animals that will welcome and adopt other puppies or other baby animals. And because she's had that opportunity, and not every wolf has that opportunity, but because she did, as far as the conservation aspect, I thought it'd be a great the perfect timing to write the fifth book and show that the conservation efforts are not only within these facilities, but also in the wild.
A conservation person somewhere in the world knows, oh, this wolf over here is going to have a baby. So, and what, did they sneak them in the middle of the night with the baby and just put them with the other babies there and try to get out before the wolf mother wakes up?
So wolves are really scared of humans. And what will happen is that when the people with the small puppy are hiking in the area, they will leave the den. The mom will leave the den and hope that she did a good enough job hiding the den that no one will find it. Well, what she doesn't realize is that she does have a collar on, and we know exactly where the den is. And so so that's how, you know, the conservationists are able to find the den. And that's actually how they are able to figure out how old those wild puppies are, because they will notice the behavior when the mom starts just staying in the den for the most part. Then they will know that she's had puppies. And so they can gauge how old they are. And that's how they do it. And so she'll run away and then she'll come back and then she'll be like, oh, we don't know if they can count. Maybe they can. She likely knows that, you know, there was a new one added just by scent alone. But they welcome them. And, you know, that's just the way wolves are. They really love puppies. They love family. That's who they are.
I love that. That's really fun. Where can we go? First off, where can we go to see those webcams that you were talking about?
Yeah. So on the Wolf Conservation Center's website, newyorkwolf.org, you can go to where they'll have a listing that says webcams. So there's various ways to get there. Either you can go to Meet Our Wolves and they'll show the web cameras, or they'll highlight where you can go to the web cameras. And each family has webcams. So you can watch, you know, the different families. If, you know, one family's not doing anything exciting at the moment, you can go to the other family, see what they're up to. So you can go and watch them, and you can learn about the wolves just through their bio. Each wolf has a bio and history, so it's fun to be able to learn about them.
Awesome. And do you have any thoughts, maybe now that you are a successful children's author with four books out there in the world, have you considered creating other children's stories that aren't wolf and trumpet related?
I have. And, you know, there are some stories in the back of my mind. Right now, my main focus is on getting Trumpet's story out there. She is getting older, and, you know, I would love to just have as many people as possible be able to read her story while she is alive. But obviously, you know, she will live on, not only through her genetics, but also her story. You know, when she does pass away, people can still enjoy and learn about her. And that I think is a real honor. it actually was something that kind of happened. The first book features her parents, mm-hmm. and both her parents have now passed on. And, it was something that I look at, you know, those illustrations and, you know, obviously I met her parents, but just to know that, you know, other people that never had the chance, maybe even weren't born yet when they were alive, that they'll be able to learn about her parents and that, you know, they live on through their story.
Yeah. And where can people find out more about you and all the trumpet books?
Yes. Yeah, so I have my bio with Briley and Baxter Publications. So you can learn about me there. As far as learning more about trumpet, the best place is obviously the Wolf Conservation Center's website. And they're on Facebook, they're on Instagram, TikTok, Threads. And if anybody wants to contact me, they can contact me through my email, leocadiageorge.books@gmail.com. And I would gladly have a greater conversation about the books or trumpet. Yeah.
We've had a great time speaking to the author of Trumpet, the Miracle Wolf Pup series. Our latest book is Trumpet Becomes a Mom. Our guest has been Leocadia George. Hey, Leocadia, thanks so much for being back with us on Reading With Your Kids.
Thank you.
Hey, my friends, I have a super idea you are going to love. How about this weekend, turn your backyard cookout into a storybook celebration? Fire up the grill, crack open a few of your favorite picture books, and serve up Big Fork Brand's legendary bacon sausage. Made with nitrate-free bacon and premium pork, it's juicy, smoky, and unforgettable. Top it off with Big Fork spicy Chicago fire sauce, and you've got a meal as bold as the characters in your favorite bedtime tale. Get 20% off your order using the promo code READ at BigForkBrands.com. That's BigForkBrands.com. Promo code READ to get 20% off. Because nothing brings families together like great food, great books, and a whole lot of flavor. Big Fork Brands. Read, grill, repeat. We are going to have a lot of fun. Our guest is here today to celebrate. Her new picture book is called Narwhal versus Kindergarten. Please welcome to the show the author and illustrator, Vanessa Roeder. Vanessa, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here and to talk about all things books.
Yes, and Vanessa and I were just talking about some of our less than successful experiences meeting authors at children's book festivals. You were sharing with me, and we won't name names, but you were sharing with me one of your experiences at the Texas Book Festival. Have you had the chance to have a table there and meet your fans at that event or other events?
I haven't. When my very first book came out, I got to do a book reading at a tent, and it was a wonderful experience. It was one of my very first book readings where I had to draw in front of a live audience. I was terrified, was not used to drawing in front of people. I'm used to being at home, staring at my, you know, paper on my desk and mm-hmm. getting to make all the mistakes just in the comfort of my own space instead of out in front of people. But overall, it was a wonderful experience. I had kids come up and help me draw. And yeah, and I hope one day I can get back there.
Yeah. You know, I mentioned it because I wasn't aware of these things when my kids were young, because they would have loved to have gone and meet some of their favorite authors, be introduced to some new authors. So people, if you're listening, if you have a chance to get out to a book festival, take it up. Most of them are absolutely free. You end up spending maybe a couple hundred bucks on books, but that's your choice. No one's forcing you to do that.
It's a win either way in my book. You go spend a little money and you get these wonderful things we call books that you cherish forever.
So tell us about Narwhal versus Kindergarten. I never thought of Kindergarten being kind of competitive or adversarial, but as I think back, because it's been almost 100 years, there were moments when I thought I was up against the world.
Yes. I think, there's always this fear with starting something new. And in this case, Narwhal versus Kindergarten, it's about a narwhal named Hugo who's navigating his first week of kindergarten. And he's running into all sorts of problems because he has this big, tall tusk that's getting in the way of so many things. And he wants to hide his tusk. He wants not to cause all this trouble. And so he starts to think he's the only one dealing with all these problems. But what you learn as you go through reading this book, what you learn is that there are other characters in this book that are also having their own struggles. And it all culminates in this baseball game where they end up working together and helping each other. And you learn that that your problems may not go away, but when you're working together and when you're including everybody and when you are showing empathy, that it makes the process a whole lot easier to navigate.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Now, this is probably going to sound very unkind, and I hope there are no narwhals or friends of narwhals listening, but that is a weird, that thing, that tusk, that is kind of weird and definitely would get in the way of a lot of things, I think.
Yes, it's, narwhals are whales. They're commonly referred to as the unicorns of the sea because they have this enormously long tusk, which it's a tooth. You want to say it's a horn because it looks like a horn, but it's actually a tooth that sticks out of what is, like in the book, it looks like it's sticking out of the top of his head, but it's actually sticking out of the front of their face. Just like an elephant or a walrus, they have big tusks. This is the narwhal's own tusk. And I feel like it would get in the way of a lot of things.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem to have a purpose. It's not like you could, get food, use it to hunt. I mean, then the fish would be just hanging out there, 2 feet away from your mouth.
Yeah, they're still, I think, trying to find out why they have the tusk. I think they're sensitive, like a tooth is, and maybe it's for, it helps with navigating and figuring out the world, but... But yeah, it seems like a fun accessory more than anything.
So was it that fun accessory that inspired you to create a book about a narwhal in kindergarten?
It started with a sketch. It actually started in 2018. I was doing a series of alliterative sketches or alliterative animals wearing fashion sketches, so to speak, like an Afghan hound wearing an Afghan or a zebra in a zoot suit. And I drew this narwhal in a necktie and I saved all these sketches and put them away. And then about a year later, I decided to revisit the sketches and I found the narwhal in a necktie and I redrew him. Gave him his necktie, and then I added a situation, and I actually gave him a little hat, a little bowler hat, but, his tusk is getting in the way of him wearing a hat. It's actually ripped through the top of it, and that got me to thinking, well, what problems might a narwhal have if he lived in the world as we know it? And so he might have problems driving a car because his tusk would, stick out the top of the car. He might have problems like jumping in a bounce house. And so I started gathering all of these problems he might face and put it together in a little story. And it was him just trying to navigate life. And it was my editor who suggested, well, why don't I focus it to be revolving around his first week of kindergarten. So then I had to go back to the drawing board and figure out, well, how might the tusk get in the way of activities in kindergarten? And I started adding other animal characters. And what I really wanted to show in this book was how sometimes when we're having struggles, we think we're the only ones having struggles. And those struggles can feel so big that we think that's all people see when they look at us is our problems and our struggles. And I wanted to show that everybody has different struggles they may face. And the way I showed that in the book was by through background humor. So we've got this main story of the narwhal navigating his way through kindergarten, causing all these problems. And then what you see in the background are all these other little individual stories, like a squid who's inking all the time, or a giraffe who's too tall that he takes up a whole slide when he tries to slide down, or what else do we have? An armadillo who keeps rolling into a ball. And so it was just this way to show that everybody has these struggles in their own way, and that we can make space for everybody, and we can be inclusive, and we can come together, and we can work together to figure out how to help each other.
Yeah. You know, I'm loving this conversation. One of the things I often ask author illustrators is what came first. And obviously for you, it was the narwhal and these goofy kind of predicaments. But I'm also loving how you're describing how the story came about. You know, it's like the narwhal, but then he has a hat that's stuck on top of the tusk, and then he's in driving a Volkswagen, and, you know, and I because I find the creative process, it's so different for everyone. And as someone who's created my, you know, educational magic shows and this podcast, I know that my process is very different than everybody else's. And I just find it so fascinating to kind of dig into somebody's brain and just kind of see how they're seeing the world. And you have a very neat way of looking at the world.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's always fun to try to figure out, like, to come up with characters and try to figure out how they would navigate their surroundings. And so when I'm working with kids and we're working on coming up with story ideas, I ask them like to pick a character or pick an animal. And what do you know about this animal? Like a giraffe, it has a very long neck. It's very tall. It's got these, you know, beautiful patterns on its fur. And I'm like, well, what could this giraffe might face? What are the obstacles a giraffe might face because of its physical characteristics? Or, you know, take an animal and put him in the exact opposite environment of where he's supposed to be. And what challenges might that animal face in the environment and in that, you know, environment? And this is what I do with my own work is I take an animal I'm interested in and just start playing with it and figuring out what their obstacles might be. And then, of course, you start to draw on your own experiences and sprinkle those in throughout your stories. But it's all about just having fun, making things silly and absurd. I mean, having a narwhal going to school on land was so outlandish to me at one point. I was like, why am I even writing this? Like, how would a narwhal even walk? And my daughter, who's lovely, she like brought me back down and said, look, it's fiction. You can be silly. You can have fun. You can play with it. It's okay. It'll work out, you know. But you just have to play and have fun.
How old is your daughter?
She's 24 now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But she's helped me since she was a kid, so.
I think you got that word of wisdom from a 7-year-old.
No. But she is very wise and has been forever. And she helps me with a lot of my stories, gives me a lot of story ideas, which I'm grateful for.
Great. I hope the narwhal didn't come from a party that she was at a college.
No. This was just, you know, something in my brain that I thought would be, you know, funny, a narwhal trying to wear a hat. And that's what started the whole process. And
Yeah. I love how it bloomed into this wonderful story about connection and cooperation and inclusion. I'm imagining that reading this book with my kids when they were younger would have been such a blast, not only talking about the story, but seeing all those other things that are going on in the background. I'm guessing you could... a family could spend 10, 15 minutes on each spread just looking at all the other chaos that's going on.
Yes, yes. I love to add those extra little stories within my picture books. You know, it makes for a good rereadability. The kids can come back and see something new every time. I remember reading Goodnight Moon with my daughter, and there's a little mouse in the book. And it moves around the room on each spread. And that was such a fun game for my daughter to go find where the mouse was in each spread. And so I like to do the same for my books because I think having those details, having those little extra stories and nuggets that kids can come back and find, it makes it such a fun journey when you read the book again and again. And of course, we as parents know we have to read the book over and over and over again if our kids like it. But it helps make things new and fresh and exciting.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's why it's worth the $15, $20 for a good children's book, because you're going to read it 500 times.
Yes, yes, exactly. And I do like to add jokes in there that I think are more for the adults as well. So it makes it fun. And I do that as, you know, since I was a parent of young kids and having to read those books. And when my kids would latch onto books that, you know, weren't the most fun to read and we'd have to read them over and over again, I always appreciated the books that had some humor in it for the adults.
Yeah. One of my favorite things when I was doing my educational magic shows full time was I would have these jokes that I knew were going to bomb. It was going to go over everybody's head, especially the kids. But there would always be one or two teachers in the back of the room. I'd say the joke, it would land, it would bomb. And then you just hear this from a teacher in the back. I'm like, yes, score.
Yes, yes. I have those moments when I'm doing school visits because some of the jokes in my books go right over the kid's head. But it never fails that there's always a parent or a teacher that will laugh out loud. Mm-hmm. And I think, yes, that one was for y'all.
Now, going back to your process, as you're creating the book and the different spreads, do you go through one time telling the story of the narwhal, and then when that's kind of finished, then do you go back and add the little kind of Easter egg-y things of the giraffe going down the slide and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think like in the revision process, since at first the book was just about the narwhal trying to navigate life, I think I had him at a birthday party with a bunch of different animals and his tusk is popping all the balloons at the birthday party. But it's figuring out his journey first. And when we focused it on kindergarten and I knew I had all these other characters at this birthday party and I wanted to include them all in this class. And while I had his journey figured out, that's where the fun comes in, where you start to figure out, okay, how can I incorporate all of these animals in a fun way? Mm-hmm. And then it goes back to like, okay, what are these animals' characteristics? And what would their obstacles be? And how can I include that into the story? And there are some animals in here that you don't see, like there's a fox and you don't see his struggles throughout the journey. But you do see little struggles with other characters. And so I had already established a lot of these. And so it was just trying to figure out how I can put these little nuggets throughout the book that makes it fun. And that, you know, shows the kids that they're all different and they're all going to have different struggles in the same setting.
Yeah. I think that's such an important message and a great way to start conversations. I remember having an experience with my son and his friends when they were in seventh or eighth grade, and they were all trying really, really hard to show each other that they knew what was going on, that they had everything together, and none of them had a clue. And it was so bad, I actually just came out and I said that. I goes, you're all trying to kid each other. None of you guys have a clue. So just revel in your ignorance and just get together and try to figure it out together.
Right. Exactly. And I think, you know, writing this story and drawing on my own experiences, like, it might not be something you realize that early on in life in kindergarten. Of course, it was something I came to much later in life, learning that, oh no, everybody's, they're not all focusing on my problems. They're all focusing on their other problems. But it's not that you don't have those struggles when you're little and fears and anxiety. And I think there's so much to be said for shared experiences, mm-hmm. that you know you're not, when you know you're not alone, that you know you have a community around you, you know you have a group of friends around you that can help you in whatever you're going through. Mm-hmm. It makes it so much easier to realize that at a younger age instead of hiding and trying to, like you said, with your sons, trying to project this facade of having it all together, mm-hmm. and instead relying on each other and our own shared experiences to help us get through anything we might face.
Yeah. I think that's it. I think that the whole idea of like, hey, none of us have it together, and that's okay because we're supposed to help each other. And what a great lesson for a kid in kindergarten, first grade, to start thinking about, because, boy, I don't know about you, Vanessa. I know grown-ups who haven't come to that realization yet. And they're just like, no, my world's perfect, while everything is falling apart around them.
Yes. Yeah. Like I said, I came to that realization much later in life. And it would have been so much more helpful had I learned early on that, you know, we're all in this together.
Right.
This is all our world. Mm-hmm. We all have to go through trials in whatever mm-hmm. we may face, whether it's like, you know, disabilities or problems that you can see or problems that are hidden, but just learning that we can make space for everybody. We can all help each other and lift each other up.
Yeah.
It makes our experience so much more beautiful.
Yes. I agree. Hey, what's the next project? Can you give us a sneak preview of what you might be sketching in your imagination now?
Oh, gosh, I'm working on several things right now. They won't be out for a while. One of them's a book about pirates.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. I have a lot of fun. That one came about thanks to my daughter. I try to sneak pirates in my books. For some reason, they've become a fiction. They're in two of my books. I tried to get them in three, but they were cut. And I was telling her, you know, how I tried to put pirates in all of these books. And she goes, ooh, Mom, it's like the pirates are trying to take over your stories. And I went, that's a great idea. So that was the start of that one. I'm also working on a story about a tuxedo cat and a story about a pocket mouse. And they're kind of in the early stages of their journeys. I'm in the process of figuring them all out, but it's fun.
Awesome. Well, you have an open invitation to come back and celebrate the pirate or the cat or the mouse whenever you're ready.
Thank you so much. I would love to talk with you again and tell you more about these characters.
Let's tell everybody where they can go to find out more about Narwhal versus Kindergarten and more about you.
My website is VanessaRoeder.com, and all of my social media is under Nessa D Art. That's N-E-S-S-A D-E-E Art, A-R-T.
Awesome.
And yeah, you can find what I'm working on. You can find silly videos. You can find all my books.
Very cool. We've had a great time speaking to the author and illustrator of Narwhal versus Kindergarten. Our guest has been Vanessa Roeder. Hey, Vanessa, thanks for being on Reading with Your Kids.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a blast and I can't wait to come back.
Hey, we hope you've enjoyed this episode of Reading with Your Kids and will join us for the next exciting episode of the show. If this episode made you smile or gave you something to think about, please consider sharing it with a friend. And please consider leaving a 5-star review. And of course, we'd love it if you could subscribe to the show. We'd also love it if you could connect with us on social media, facebook.com/readingwithyourkids, at readingwithyourkids on Instagram, and at JedlyMagic on X. I want to thank the folks who made today's show so wonderful, starting with our guest, Leocadia George. Please be sure to check out Trumpet Becomes a Mom. And Vanessa Roeder. Please be sure to check out Narwhal versus Kindergarten. I want to thank my team, Fatima Khan, Chris Daugherty. I want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. Most of all, we all want to thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. And as always, thank you so very much for taking the time to make the world a better place. And you do that every time you read with your kids. I'll be looking for you in the next episode of Reading with Your Kids.